Continuing Proverbs 14:19, Wednesday. The evil will bow down before the good and the wicked at the gates of the righteous. I've kind of seen this before. What's happening when the evil bow down before the good and the wicked at the gates of the righteous? I guess the wicked bow down too at the gates of the righteous. So what are we saying?
Good overcomes evil.
Okay. And if the evil is bowing down, they're humbled. Maybe there's some homage being paid. If you're a good person doing the best you can, and you see some evil out there, does this give you some kind of hope? Imagine you're really held down. You're in a society and a government that's really where good is not appreciated, I guess. So when you read this, you get a sense of hope, don't you? Evil will bow down before the good. The wicked at the gates of the righteous will bow down. In other words, I guess you can see hope and reward at the end of all this. We're doing the moral goodness, good things in life. You see some reward in it.
Okay. It may not be in this life. It may be like the rich man in Lazarus. It may be after life.
This is a motivation that you're going to triumph in the end. You know, okay. And what you're doing is the right thing to do. All right. I mean, it seemed like it, but this is the idea that offers hope for this.
He said every knee will bow at Jesus. So I mean, He is the ultimate good and righteous, and all evil men, on that day, will acknowledge
that
He is true.
How do you separate the evil? Here, talking about the wicked and the evil. How do you separate the two?
Okay.
I got a note on that.
All right. Here we go. Basically, synonyms: bad, evil, and wicked. Okay. This is from Dawn's comment here a while back. I went ahead and looked that up. Bad is the more general term. And when you say evil and wicked, the evil emphasizes inherent capacity for harm or corruptive influence. There's a capacity for harm and influence in that. But the wicked pertains to potential for wrong, but to the premeditated practice of it. So a wicked may be the idea of actually putting things into effect. All right?
One just thinks it. One's actually...
Yeah. Now, bad, again, can cover all this.
Right.
Even wicked. And the evil is the idea of potential, inherent capacity for harm and corruptive influence. All right. So it's kind of a stage thing, looks like.
Thank you. That was a good explanation.
I'm glad you
stood it. All this from an ethical, moral standpoint. Okay, so I got that right there.
You know, we started, we talked about parallelism. And it is just synonymous parallelism. It's saying the same thing but using different words. You know, the evil man is going to be the first and the second part of the verse, the first and the second part of the verse.
And with some of these, sometimes a little more general, but what's that general thing talking about? You see, in the second part there is really specific you're talking about. We're going to see a lot of poor things throughout the rest of the chapter. Poor, poverty, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, okay? And who is suppressed? Who is harmed generally in society? Poor, poverty. That's the general idea, isn't it? Because you don't have access to lawyers. You may not have intellectual levels. Not to mention legal services. Okay? It's a difficult thing. All right? And when you don't have a strong sense of a public defender, okay, you're on your own. And so we're going to see some of that through here. The evil will bow down for the good and the wicked at the gates of the righteous. Again, it pertains to hope. Hope for those who do good in life. All right? Because sometimes we may feel suppressed, hurt by those who are evil. 20. The poor is hated even by his neighbor, but those who love the rich are many. That sad but true picture of just kind of human nature somewhere in it sometimes. The poor just hated or shunned or whatever by his neighbor, but those who love the rich are many. That's just a nice general truism, quote unquote. All right? not mad. Okay, see the idea? All right. People like the rich, don't they? Until the rich is gone, isn't it? Then you see who your friends are. Mm-hmm. All right? It's like a lottery winners. You got all the friends in the world. You never knew you had that many cousins and uncles, did you? All right? You see that all the time. There's some books written on that, on lottery winners. It's interesting. Okay? What happened to this man here lately? The man out in the west part of town just won $100-something million?
West part of this town?
Yeah.
Mom's a kicker in Katie.
Yeah, it's Katie. Yeah. He gave it all to Catholic Church.
$144 million.
Yeah. You all have to not watch the news.
And he gave it to the nuns. Retirement fund or something like that. This is last move.
But I didn't think the nuns could have financial. Well,
still got to take care of them, health benefits and retirement and general income. Yeah. But anyway, that's what happened to it. That's the news. All right. Interesting. Okay. We saw a little bit in the New Testament. People get the cheap seats in the synagogue. Are they the rich or the poor?
The
rich. Yes, yeah, so be careful there, okay? 21, he who despises his neighbor, sin. But happy is he who is gracious to the poor. Okay? He who despises or looks down on his poor neighbor, sins. But happy or blessed he who is gracious to the poor. Are we just talking about here what? Kindness to the needy? Helping others, all right? And you don't want to have the attitude that it'll be a sin if you look down on those poor neighbors. They're like the poor and rich and that kind of thing. All right? What's it show about a character if we look down on poor people? So is despise them. What does it show about a character?
Uncompassionate.
Huh?
Materialistic.
Materialistic, compassionate. Some arrogance maybe in there. Okay. Now, people have their place. I mean, I'm not saying have their place, but people are where they're at. Mm-hmm. Okay. But there's no need to rub it in, I guess, is there? All right. Or especially have things in our character that show, you know, not ability to help. So happy is he who is gracious to the poor. All right.
I'm thankful too. You know, it shows that we don't appreciate the mercy and the graciousness of God to us because we're poor and wretched and have nothing without Him. And so, you know, if we treat a fellow person that way, then that actually shows attitude towards the God we serve.
It does, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Okay. 22. 14:22, Sam. Will they not go astray who devise evil? But kindness and truth will be to those who devise good. Here's a question. Will they not go astray who plan or devise evil? Will they not go astray? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. But kindness and truth will be to those who devise good. When you have that kindness and affection and truth and trust always in your life, and who devise good, plan for good, is the general idea that you will not go astray with it. All right? So that's your comparison of going astray and not going astray. So evil people who plan for evil, generally they'll go astray, and the others will not. 23. In all labor there is profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. We're talking the lazy one, aren't we? Okay? I want to say in the first part, in all honest labor, there's profit. But mere talk leads only to poverty. If just mere talk is the idea of lazy or sluggard.
Talk's a good game.
Just talk a game, don't they?
Or pie in the sky.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
there's
right.
Some people who just, you know, talk a good game, or they look for the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow instead of, you know,
jumping from one pot of gold to another, right?
Right.
Right. And this poverty may mean need or sorrow, that kind of thing. Okay?
Is this where the saying, talk is cheap?
I guess so. It's cheap. That's a, that kind of goes with our poverty prophet kind of words, doesn't it?
Okay.
All right.
Tell me what you got.
It's not saying don't talk. Just saying follow it up, isn't it? Okay. 24. The crown of the wise is their riches, but the folly of the fools is foolishness. Well, that's quite a tangler, isn't it? The crown of the wise is their riches, but the folly of the fools is foolishness. If we say crown of the wise, that's generally thought of as a symbol of honor. Okay? So what can a rich person, a wise rich person, do with their riches? That their riches are then a symbol of honor for doing good with it. What can a wise person do with their riches to have wise actions with their riches?
Serve others.
Serve others. Okay? Do good with their wealth. See the idea? What better way if you're blessed with riches? And you've worked hard at that. What better way to help others? Okay, and there's all kind of ways to do that, isn't there? All right, you don't have to give cash to people. You can always help with all kinds of things. All right, education, whatever it is, and deserving people. But the folly of the fools, the symbol there is a folly. What's at the end of theirs? What's done with the things that come out of their life? Most of it's self-serving, isn't it? See? And basically a fool, when they finish, they're just, the end of their game is just more foolishness. And there's not much at the end of them, okay, as far as what they've accumulated, what they want to get in life. So it's interesting. Alright? 25. A truthful witness saves lives, but he who utters lies is treacherous. Witnesses, let's say in a court, does a truthful witness save lives? How would he do that?
Well, when he tells the truth, it might save the person that's on
top. Okay, all right. For he's not bribed, he's not whatever it is, okay, threatened, but he tells truth. But he who utters lies is treacherous.
He's deceitful, you can't trust him.
That's right, that's right. Treachery, hurt, maybe even death comes in, who knows, okay? But just a general statement that a truthful witness saved lives.
And all right. It could be lives of the innocent, that the guilty person, because I told the truth and put somebody away for a long time when I was in court, and it saved him from breaking into houses and hurting other people. How's that?
Now, was that rehab you were thinking, or was it punishment when you did that?
He went to jail.
Like, well, you're rehabilitation or punishment? What's a sentence
like
for? What around a jury?
It was punish because.
Punish. That's right. That's right. Okay. You're rehabbing some other day. Let's get the punishment over first. Okay. 26. In the fear of the Lord, there is strong confidence, and his children will have refuge. When you're fearing the Lord, and you're reverencing the Lord, respecting the Lord, does that breed strong confidence?
Yes.
Yes, because of the safety you're in, the safe place you're in, the fortress, the protection, all that sort of thing, isn't it? Okay? And his children will have refuge. Those who have the fear of the Lord teach their children, and so therefore the children can benefit from that, can't they? Have safety and refuge, protection, that kind of thing. Just kind of a pass down. It could be a pass down thing. All right? And strong confidence in that what you're doing is right, in that fear of the Lord. All right.
Do you think his children there is the Lord?
It could be. It could be. And that would fit up that parallel with 26, the idea that there's a strong confidence. It could be either way. Okay? But either one's equally true, I think, there. 27. The fear of the Lord is what? It's a fountain of life. Well, what have we seen fountain of life is? Nourishment. It's necessary for living. It's good. Okay? That one may avoid the snares of death. It's life and death. See it there? Okay? These snares of death, the net of death. what kind of snares and things out there that can lead to death and separation?
All the things that we studied in chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5,
6. Yeah, we just saw in 25, lying, isn't it?
Right.
Okay.
Sure, others' lies. We saw in chapter 1, violence, didn't we? See, succumbing to that. And it's immoralness. We just saw somewhere we see laziness up there. One of these verses. Okay? In 23, mere talk leads to poverty. And so these all these little snares are out there that you need to avoid those, okay, because they don't give you access to a fountain of life and nourishment and good things in life. 28, in a multitude of people is a king's glory, but in the dearth of people is a prince's ruin. In a multitude of king's glory
is dearth.
Dearth is the idea of famine, lack of food.
Lack of people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Scarcity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, scarcity. Okay.
Thank you.
And so we got a bunch of people and less people. Does a king have more status, or does a person have more status the more people they oversee? Okay, I kind of flipped a little bit there. It's kind of like that, isn't it? Okay. So therefore, if you're ruling good in a good manner, or you're supervised good manner, or whatever you are, then is that a glory? Yes, it is, isn't it? Okay. So the more subjects. So, but what's the ruin of a prince? That sometimes when you've got lesser people or whatever, the prince is ruined. They may know more about you. You're more dependent maybe on the quality of the relationships. There's an interesting point about that. Okay. Again, it might deal with the idea of lack of food too. When you got kings and princes, and back then, there was a lot of things that they would force famine on the people for more dependence. Or just more taxes. Okay? Interesting. 29. He who is slow to anger has great understanding. But he who is quick-tempered exalts folly. We've seen this before. Slow to anger. And that represents what?
Self-control.
Prudence. Understanding where you're at. Think before you talk. All them sort of things, isn't it? But he who is quick-tempered or hot-headed exalts folly or elevates folly. Seen people that just the slightest little thing sets them off? Okay? There's something said or done or whatever it is. Sometimes people get angry. You don't know why. Get angry over nothing. Nothing to you.
You don't know why they're mad.
But he's saying here, we don't want to exalt folly. So you got to be careful when you into this situation where it would cause an anger. I'm not going to get into the question about the idea of can you be angry or not. Can you be?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure you can. Okay, it's going to happen. What can I say? All right. 30. A tranquil heart is life to the body, but passion is rottenness to the bone. Okay, tranquil, contentness, compared to passion here. This passion may be back to this idea of hot temper and that sort of thing, okay?
You can change it a little bit.
Okay.
It says,
sound heart is the life of the flesh,
okay,
but envy the rottenness of the body.
All right, so it's defining the passion, isn't it, with envy, okay? And can envy really warp one's senses and character? Sure, it can. The want involved, isn't it? Okay? Strong desire in that. Strong passion. And how is it? So, tranquil is life to the body. Peaceable life, good life, tranquil heart. Not being envious. Let's just use Sally's, okay? But when this envy, this passion is such a degree that it'll hurt. It'll hurt from your innermost parts, won't it? Rottenness to the bones. It'll tend to warp everything you think and say, isn't it? And do. See? Okay? All right? And we talk about, let's see.
If you're tranquil, I like content. What you said about content.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because if there is not content, especially in home, there's strife.
Yes.
And there is, and it comes from this envy, because you're wanting this and you're wanting that, and you're dissatisfied about this and you're dissatisfied about that. And so there is no joy, and there's no peace, and there's no tranquility.
Exactly right. And it goes to the innermost part of your rottenness, to your bones.
And it can even be a person not at peace with themselves. They look at other people and they don't love themselves as themselves and look at their qualities and everything. They're so busy wanting to be like somebody else, or, you know, not just have the things that somebody else has, but discontent with who they are. And that's not a healthy place to be, or a comfortable place to be either.
31. He who oppresses the poor taunts his maker, but he who is gracious to the needy honors him the maker. So here's a direct thing I would think to another aspect of the Lord. He who oppresses the poor taunts. Taunts is to mock or jeer, have contempt.
James has reproach.
Okay. His maker, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when you're oppressing the poor again, you're insulting the maker. You're showing contempt for the maker. But he who is gracious to the needy, kind to the needy, honors him. Same idea we were kind of talking a while ago, wasn't it? All right? And this is an attitude, a point of character. To honor the poor is to honor God. That's kind of, I guess you could say. All right? So we need to make sure that when we come across those like that, even ourselves. Okay? And be gracious and kind. 32.
Doug?
Yes, ma'am.
1 John 3:17 says, "But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him?"
Yes. If you don't love God, how in the world can you honor God? Can
right.
you? Okay? Much less honor his creation, which is our neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's an interesting old 32. The wicked is thrust down by his wrongdoing, but the righteous has a refuge when he dies. The wicked is thrust down, punished, held tight, captive by his wrongdoing. So the wicked has been doing wrong things, and he's punished for that. But the righteous has a refuge or a hope when he dies, that he won't be a captive or punished in the end. That's all a hope statement. I can see it here. Any other thoughts on that? But the righteous has a refuge or hope when he dies. That's pretty plain, isn't it? Okay.
Lazarus had a refuge.
Huh?
Rich man and Lazarus had a refuge.
Yes, that's right. That in the end, you know, the right thing will be done because God's involved, isn't he? Okay? 33. Wisdom rests in the heart of one who has understanding, but in the hearts of fools it is made known. Now, the "it" is interesting in the second line. Wisdom rests in the heart, or lodges in the heart, or is at home in the heart of one who has understanding. And we said already that gives contentment, doesn't it? The feeling of protection. The feeling of refuge, when it rests in your heart. And heart is the idea of innermost part of you. But in the hearts of fools, what's the point there? It is made known.
Wisdom.
Wisdom is made known. Now that's interesting. Wisdom is made known in the heart of fools. What's Proverbs trying to tell us? Remember we were saying earlier that wisdom stands at the gates. Wisdom has a paramount spot. Wisdom calls to just a select group. Wisdom calls to all, doesn't it? Okay?
But the person who's wise listens.
Yes.
The
okay?
The fool
does not. So, I take this here, but the heart of fools is made known. I don't know, but I guess deep down or whatever it is, that wisdom can still pierce to the heart of fools, and it is made known. Okay? It's available. Well, we can't study the Bible. Well, the Bible's available the whole world over, isn't it? Everybody can get hold of Scripture if they wanted to, couldn't they? Anywhere. Okay? 34. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a disgrace to any people. Now we're looking at a bigger view. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a disgrace to any people. Righteousness exalts a nation, raised to a higher level. What's the influence of a nation? What's the first thing you kind of start with to give it a point of exalting, the idea of a greater goodness? It's leaders, isn't it? All right. And if the leaders are good and fair and just, are you going to have fear of the government? Probably shouldn't as much, okay? So righteous action will exalt, elevate a nation. But sin is a disgrace to any people or shame to any people. If you have anarchy, is it anything in leadership, you know, that can cause a disgrace to people, that causes sin among the people? When the judges are corrupt, when the people in a general way don't trust anything that their government does, that won't exalt a nation, will it? All right?
It was God's indictment against Israel and why it fell, because it started with their leaders and their princes. And even with Ezra, when they went in, the princes and the leaders were the ones who had taken the foreign wives, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. before they were repented.
Yeah.
But, you know, you see it in Israel, you see it in Judah, you see it in Nineveh, you see it in the Babylonian.
Yeah.
Nebuchadnezzar went from one to the other. But you also said, you know, I really, five people, God said that he wouldn't destroy Sodom and Gomorrah if there was five righteous people. And so there's hope for our country yet, because the Lord does look down on the righteous. And,
Yeah, I've got one coming up here about providence and God doing that. Okay? And kind of staying with the king national look here, this is a type of a good leader in 35. The king's favors toward a servant who acts wisely. Would a good king do that? Would a good king show favor toward a servant who acts wisely? Yes. Would a good king in his anger toward him who acts shamefully? Would a good king do that? Yeah. Okay.
The baker and the butler in Joseph's situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Exactly what happened.
So that's just a good statement about leadership there, an idea of character of a good king. Okay? I guess you reward the good and you shame and disgrace, and I guess you reward those also who aren't, who shame the kingdom. And these are acts. No, it's acts wisely, acts shamefully. Okay? Alright, that's 35. And Proverbs chapter 15. Well, continue with this. Now let's see how many times we've heard this one. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Okay? Self-explanatory. When you respond to someone in a gentle way, it turns away wrath. But a harsh word stirs up anger, or a hard word. What are we really saying about gentle answers and a harsh answer? What are we really saying?
What you say and how you say it.
Yes. People respond to the way you say things, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, don't they? Okay? It's almost like you're defensive, okay, or you're cooperative one way or another. It's interesting, isn't it? All right? Tones of voice, inflections of speech you use, the words you use, okay? And here we're talking about gentle answers and harsh words. So, and both of them stir wrath and anger. So if you're in a hot situation or a hot situation dealing with Bible questions,
What does it hurt? Or does it hurt to amplify the volume? I mean, does it hurt? Okay? Sometimes I always left. Okay? But can you not get your point across? And can you not think better, too? And the words you choose and the wise speech. If you're determined to lower your volume. Right? Tone of voice, isn't it? Okay? All right. So that's what I see on number one there. Two, the tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of fools sprouts folly. Okay? Tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable, or right, I think some other versions come. If you're talking in wise things, and knowledge, but what happens to that knowledge? It's kind of like that gentle answer up there. It makes it acceptable, doesn't it? A gentle answer makes wisdom acceptable, doesn't it? Or correction acceptable, doesn't it?
Makes me think of
okay.
Mary Poppins. A spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. Sometimes if you're trying to teach somebody something, if you say it really nicely, it's easier for them to take it in.
Looks like they put the responsibility on the hearer here, not the speaker.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, isn't it? Well,
you got to make a determination whether he is or where he isn't.
But the mouth now of this foolish person sprouts folly or gushes out folly. And what do we know about what a fool talks? They're in excess. It may not even fit the situation.
This is in response to. It's a person saying or doing something, and then how do you respond back? How do you react?
Mm-hmm.
Do you react in kind with a harsh, go at them, attack,
mm-hmm.
or do you have a word of in calmness that would edify or build up, or, look at the situation and... Even if you had to, I know that you're angry about this, and maybe we can look at this situation, to try to appease and to bring about calmness, and not just fly off the handle and attack, and act foolishly and kind.
And this is approach. It's an approach. Why shouldn't I talk? If I'm going to take the time and effort to say wisdom or do things to help others, why shouldn't I should do the things to make it acceptable to others.
Mm-hmm.
See? Or defuse the situation or whatever it is. So it's just looking for both ways, isn't it? Okay.
That's the way they tell us that when we get an angry customer on the phone, you just kind of let them vent, and then you say, I understand your frustration, blah, blah, and try and calm the situation down to where, and once they're calm, then you can offer them suggestions on stuff. But, that's pretty much
it. It's kind of like if they raised your rate without any reason.
Yeah, sure. Like,
sure, it was 10, now it's up to 28. Why'd you do that? Could you please
tell me? My center point's gone, Reliant Energy's gone down over $100. So
You're on balance billing then, huh?
I'm on balance billing. But it went down over $100 this month. They told me it would go down in January, and it did. But our bill has never been high. We've never had no complaint.
Not even before this past couple of months.
Number three.
In ladies' class today, we talked about 1 Peter 3, and it talks about a woman married to an unbeliever who doesn't always act right. And sometimes she is even in a suffering situation. And it says chaste and respectful behavior. It talks about the gentle and quiet spirit. It talks about how she responds to this husband, even though, it may be in a less than right kind of relationship.
With the goal of winning him over in the end.
With her behavior, mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm. and the way that she responds to this. And we talked about 1 Corinthians 13, 4-7, how love acts. And that has to do with your speech and your demeanor and your character. And so, you know, I think this is talking about, we're not talking about milk toast and laying down and letting them stomp it, you know, but we're talking about not responding in kind, not being harsh.
That's right.
Rebellious.
That's right. Number three, a good general proverb. The eyes of the Lord are in every place. He's watching the evil and the good. If we're going to be judged perfectly, then God has to be every place and all the time, doesn't he? Okay? Watching everyone. Okay?
Is he talking about the words here? Is he still talking about the mouth and the speech, or has he switched gears? Because he picks up again on the tongue. Is this all?
Yeah, I'm thinking, when we say eyes and watching, we're saying, can watching include listening to people?
Watching the good and the evil.
Yeah.
Is this talking about the words, or what? There are just good and evil.
I would think it'd be everything. It's got to be everything. Okay? In other words, nothing's hidden is the idea. Now, if he's watching the good and the evil, what can come out of that? Could he use his providence? If he's watching the good?
He did to Asa.
Yeah. Okay. And nothing hidden that gives us confidence, doesn't it? That in fact we know that in the end, you know, God sees all, judged perfectly. In the end, we'll have life, okay, with him. And that evil will get its due reward, all right? So, nice general. Four, a soothing tongue is a tree of life, but perversion is in it crushes the spirit. This, back to the tongue again, a wholesome, soothing tongue is a tree of life. Could say a gentle tongue, right, if we wanted to. It's healing, it's a remedy, it's good. But what about the perversion? What does it do when you have twisted, false words? How does it affect others? It crushes the spirit. What's that?
Distrust.
Lose trust in people.
Discouragement.
It demoralizes you. See? Okay? So... And you, perversion, twisted, false things can break people's spirit, can't they? Okay? So how it affects others. Five, a fool rejects his father's discipline. Yep, that's right. Okay? But he who regards reproof is sensible. It's kind of the two sides of the coin. When you reject the father's correction, that means the fool thinks he knows more than the father, right? Who regards or heeds that reproof is sensible. Prudence involved, doesn't overreact, he understands. So that's just a nice general proverb, okay? Again, dealing with parents, dealing how you react. That discipline is involved and being sensible in the way we think. Six, great wealth is in the house of the righteous, but trouble is in the income of the wicked. Wealth and income. It's wealth and income. Let's look at the second line. But trouble or misery is in the income of the wicked. And what are we saying now? Income meaning what you, an outcome, a wages. Your actions have certain results.
Would that be money that they're getting illegally?
It could be. But what I was, it could be, because we've seen in the past as trouble and violence things come out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But this misery could be the result, income of the wicked. You know, is that what comes? Have we seen so far? That's what comes out of wicked, bad people?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Now, ample wealth, a great wealth, is in the house of the righteous. It's contentment, the outcome of this wealth of wisdom you've got, is it if it's in your house, if you practice doing the right things, is there ample wealth comes out of that? Sure. Okay?
This isn't money.
This
is not money.
Yeah, because the misery and trouble kind of clicks me over to that point and say, that's what we were talking about a while ago, this idea. But you can put it in them terms a little bit. The wages, the outcome of one's actions. So you can put it that way.
Yeah, the wages of sin is death.
Sure. Right. Mm-hmm. And everybody can understand that, you know, okay? How hard do you work? What's the outcome of it? Okay? How diligent are you when you work? See, like a lazy person, that's pretty direct there. All right. 7. The lips of the wise spread knowledge, but the hearts of fools are not so. Is that clean? The lips of the wise spread knowledge, don't they? They teach others. Should we teach others? Yeah. Okay. And we can do it with words. But the hearts of fools are not so. Not so wise. But what's their effect on spreading knowledge? From deep down a fool, do they spread knowledge from the inner self?
No.
No.
They either don't have it or they're too lazy.
Okay.
Out of the heart comes the thoughts of man, and you speak. You know, that's the beginning place. So if you begin in a heart of a fool, he's not going to speak anything that's got knowledge in the first place, because his heart's not in the right place, and it's not even thinking.
And that's really what we're saying here. Wise people, through their words, are beneficial to others, aren't they? Okay? And deep down from a fool, they're not going to be beneficial, because they're not doing those things that would help others with their words. Okay? In life. 8. The sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but the prayer of the upright is his delight. Now, it's interesting now. Sacrifice and prayer. All right? Kind of gives us kind of down what road we're going down now. I will say sacrifice of the wicked is kind of like acts of religion. Well, if one is wicked and they're doing sacrifices and they're doing acts of religion, because the wicked doing this, is an abomination to the Lord. Absolute hypocrisy, isn't it? Okay, absolute. All right, but the prayer of the upright is his delight. Say, of the upright. See, wicked and upright are contrasted. So these acts of religion, prayer, sacrifice, whatever it is, or the upright, is his delight. It's pleasing to God. Okay? All right? So that should promote us to do what when we're in acts of religion? Acts of faith. Do the best we can. Act from a pure heart. Okay? Because God knows that, because we saw it previously. The eyes of the Lord are everywhere. 9. The way of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord. But he loves one who pursues righteousness. Nice and clean, isn't it? And generally, the way of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but he loves one who pursues righteousness, seeks wisdom. That's another good general term. A good overriding proverb. Okay, any problem there? Doing right things. 10. Grievous punishment is for him who forsakes the way. He who hates reproof will die. Not punishment, grievous punishment for him who forsakes the way. Harsh discipline when you err. But he who hates or resents reproof will die.
He'll die morally and spiritually.
Yes. Okay? You'd be cut off. So there, it's kind of talking about the end game a little, isn't it? Okay.
Well, here, he will remember. We studied that when you don't seek wisdom in everything, you make bad choices and you decline morally. Romans 1 is one of those instances when you don't accept God as God, mm-hmm. and give Him thanks. Mm-hmm. They decline morally, and so and they die spiritually.
Yeah. 11. Sheol and Abaddon lie open before the Lord. How much more the hearts of men? Sheol is sometimes said to be hell, the realm of the dead. Okay?
This is hell and destruction.
Mm-hmm. And then this idea of destruction is open before the Lord. How much more the hearts of men? So you got the complexities
the idea of it, the preparation, the maintenance, all this of hell and the undead, destruction, the place of it, all that God knows, all that God, the Lord, understands. How much more the hearts of men? How much more? That's the easy part, I guess you'd say. All right? You think we're complicated. He's past that. Okay? See the idea? All right? And you couple that in. So God knows our behaviors, intentions, all that, motivations, actions, all that. See? Okay? See the idea? All right. So we watch what we do and what we say and how we do it. 12. A scoffer does not love one who reproves him. He will not go to the wise. And that's it. Let's back up. That's it. Stop right there. Thank you all very much.